Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Bagel Games interview. Today I'm joined with Matt from Retrograde and 24 Karat Games course. He is the... Well, why don't you introduce yourself, Matt? What do you do at 24 Karat Games?
I'm Matt Gelgenbach, co-founder of 24 Karat Games, and I did the gameplay programming and game design for Retrograde.
Awesome. And if you don't know what Retrograde is, it was recently released on PSN. It's a rhythm game, but with a quite a unique concept behind it. Would you like to explain to the listeners what that is, Matt?
So Retrograde is the world's first game played entirely in reverse. The premise is you're, excuse me, a spaceship pilot, and you just fought this epic battle, and now all the explosions from the battle damage the space-time continuum, causing a temporal anomaly which reverses the flow of time. So the object of the game is to actually undo the space battle as it was done. So you have to unfire your shots and avoid enemy shots that return to the guns that fired them. So it looks like a side-scrolling shoot-em-up, but it actually plays more like a rhythm game.
Yeah. And that was one of the things when I think it's worth noting that the opening level actually is really awesome, because the opening level of the campaign is, it's forwards, and you take on the final boss, don't you? Then the credits roll, and then, yeah, it rewinds right back, and you start this whole journey right from the end to the start.
Yeah, definitely. We wanted to... Well, it's sort of a difficult concept to introduce, the whole time reversing, undoing your space battle, so we felt like that would be a great way to sort of introduce the idea. Hey, time is flowing backwards, here's what you have to do.
Yeah, it's an awesome premise, and I guess my first question is, who came up with that idea, and was it the rhythm game first that came to it, or was it that you wanted to do a game in reverse and you thought it would have to be rhythm-based for this to work out?
It was the second. Basically, we were doing a demo, a tech demo for like a rail shooter where the world's always scrolling, and we had a debug mode that lets you back up time, and the other developer, Justin Wilder, he said, oh, it'd be neat if we had that as part of the game and you could actually do something when time is rewinding. But it didn't really make sense for that concept, but when we wanted to start our own sort of indie project, we went back to that and said, hey, that's a neat idea. How would we craft a game in reverse? And so we figured, as you suggested, rhythm games would be the best fit for that style of gameplay, because if you're trying to undo something that already happened, you need to get the timing right. And to get the timing right, rhythm games are really the best fit.
Oh, I see. So... was that almost like a eureka moment then? Like I'm sort of picturing in the meeting room when you're all discussing this, sort of like, oh man, and imagine with the bullet hell stuff, and you have to dodge the bullets and the power, did it all just come together pretty quickly once you hit that point?
Yeah, basically the core gameplay came together pretty quickly. And we did a build for the IGF after a month and a half of development, which... was nominated for Excellence in Design and Excellence in Audio.
Awesome.
And then from there, trying to sort of expand on the concept and really flesh it out and put in a lot of polish was a real challenge. Some of the other enemy shot types took a while to come up with ideas that work in reverse, but also, you know, preserve the sort of crazy... enemy shots from the shoot 'em up style games.
Oh, really? Could you give an example on one of those shots? Because I'm very familiar with the difficult boss fights now.
Well, the energy beam is one of the first different shots after the first level you encounter, and so the idea was that the smoke cloud gives you a signal to leave the lane. And so in forward it makes sense because it's like a residual smoke effect, but in reverse it gives you the clue you need that, hey, I have to react to this. So the real problem with things going in reverse is that you have to structure them such that they do sort of what's called telegraphing often in game design. You basically want to telegraph or show what's going to happen in the game, what the enemies are going to do. And so trying to get that in reverse is tricky. I mean, ordinarily you can have like a really long wind-up or charging effect on the enemies, but since time is going backwards, we couldn't do something like that. We had to come up with things that work backwards in terms of sending the message, hey, something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Those beams coupled with the gravity holes gave me the most problems in the game. For people who don't know, Retrograde, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but it was in development for, is it 4 or 5 years?
4 years.
4 years. So I guess one obvious question is, if it all came together so quickly and you had this concept at the beginning, why did it take 4 years to get the game out there?
Well, that's something I often ask myself, because I think it would have been we would have been better served to get the game out a lot quicker. A lot of people have, you know, scrapped their guitar controllers, which we think is a cool feature. I mean, certainly the game, I think, is a lot of fun with the gamepad as well, but I think that was sort of a neat hook we had with the guitar controller. So a lot of it comes down to polish. The sort of visual polish we put into the game, there's a lot of detail and a very clean and crisp look, and we did a lot of optimizations to the PlayStation 3. Like, we may be the only game ever to run at 1080p, 60 frames a second with anti-aliasing.
Wow.
One of the guys at Sony was talking about that. I don't know if he ever followed up, but he thought we might be. So it has a very, very polished graphical look, which definitely took a lot of time with such a small team, because basically our team was two programmers and an artist. And so people are often impressed when they realize just how few people made the game.
Yeah, and that's certainly shocking. So wait, it was four people?
Well, mostly it was three people in terms of full-time work. So if you look at the credits, we had a lot of contractors and people who are just helping out here and there. Mainly the work was done by myself and Justin Wilder, who did the engine programming and the special effects and stuff. And then we had our Joe Grabowski, who is our principal artist, who did most of the art in the game. And then we had, you know, a number of contractors, and we worked with you know, extra artists here and there, and sound designer and the musician Skylar McLaughlin. But really it was basically only three people on the game full time.
That's mad. So another question I want to ask about the origins is why did you pick the PlayStation 3?
Well, it was less that we picked the PlayStation 3 and more like the PlayStation 3 picked us. when we were at the IGF in 2009, someone from Sony came along and said, hey, are you interested in being on PlayStation Network? And we said, yeah, sure. And, basically they were starting up a really neat program to allow indie developers to self-publish on PlayStation Network, which is something you can't do on Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh, wow.
It seemed like a really good fit for something quirky and crazy. We tried talking to publishers about the game, but usually they didn't get it, or once a publisher was like, oh, I totally get this, I love the game, but there's no way I could explain it to marketing. So it's definitely a tough game to sell people on, and the advantage of being self-published is that we don't have to sell anyone else on it, really. I mean, Sony had to approve the concept, but they didn't really want to try and say, hey, you know, you have to put Call Me Maybe in the soundtrack, or, right, you know, that or the other. So we were sort of free to execute on our vision, which is really great, and what you dream of as an indie developer?
That's a good point. And I mean, this question is like quite political or something, but it doesn't mean to be. But it's not exclusive to Sony, right? The Retrograde isn't an Sony exclusive. It can go anywhere, right?
Basically, since we own the entire thing, we own the IP, we own all of it, we can move it to whatever platforms we want. For the time being, we are a PlayStation 3 exclusive.
And did Sony support you in any way with development or anything? Or were you just sort of, did Sony just essentially say, yeah, you're good to go, do what you do, and come back to us when it's ready?
Yeah, basically, they just said, go for it, have fun, and if you need help, we're here to help you. And so they did do some support, like they flew me out to Fantastic Fest to promote the game as part of their PlayStation Arcade. So that was really cool, but for the most part, everything has been us in terms of getting the game out and getting word out about the game. We've had to do all of that.
Okay, cool. Did you find that daunting at first, the idea that you would be on your own, essentially?
Well, the thing was, I didn't think it was daunting at first, mostly because I didn't realize sort of how difficult it would be to execute on that.
Okay.
So I didn't feel like that at first, but I probably should have, I guess, is what I'm getting at. That publishing a title is no small task. There's a lot of work required. So definitely, I guess I didn't have a good idea of how much work that was going to be. And how difficult it is to get the review codes out there, to get people interested in the game, to get your stories picked up and stuff. And certainly Sony was very helpful because they let us sort of use the PlayStation blog as an outlet for interesting information about Retrograde. But even still, it was definitely a lot of work.
Yeah, and for anyone who doesn't know, at least in Europe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong with the United States, but at least in Europe, Retrograde is currently free on PlayStation Plus if you're a subscriber. So definitely pick it up, because there's heaps of content in that game. But we'll get into that in a bit. But is that right, that it's free on PlayStation Plus in the US as well?
No, it's not free on PlayStation Plus in the US. It's only free in Europe. Basically, Sony Europe was interested in doing this new PlayStation Plus Presents, where they have an indie game for free for Plus subscribers. And so we're actually the first title of this new program. I think Machinarium is second. So it definitely was a great opportunity for us to sort of get the game out there in the hands of gamers and definitely helped with publicity and spreading the word. So we're very happy about that. In the US, they don't have PlayStation Plus Presents. They have a whole set of different promotions. So it wasn't really something we could do in both regions.
Oh, I see, yeah. But we also did a cool giveaway. Matt was nice enough to give us 2 Retrograde codes that we gave away on Facebook, and those guys were very happy to get their hands on that game. And you're right when you say it's kind of a tough sell to explain exactly what's different about Retrograde, because it is different. It's not just a rhythm game. When I was trying to explain it to a friend, he said to me that, you know, he wasn't really into the rhythm genre, and you know, I've played Guitar Hero and things like that, and but there was something really addictive about Retrograde, and I think it's because it puts my mind on so many different levels. When you're having to dodge, beware of power-ups, especially if you're using a DualShock controller, dodging is a bit hard because you have to double tap sometimes between mm-hmm. certain things. There's like so many things happening on screen, and like you say, it runs beautifully. You spoke about the art and the scrolling like in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I'd try and watch levels forward when it had finished because I'd miss a lot of the cool stuff happening in the background because I was focusing so much on what was happening when you're playing the game.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Most people tend to block out the background completely when they're playing, but there's so many details and little things going on there that few people really take the time to notice them all.
Yeah. And one question that I want to ask, because as I was playing it, I noticed this, and I was like, how hard must it have been to design this? Because as I was playing it, there'd be some sections where my mind would go on autopilot, and I was just like, what the hell? Like, last night, I finished Extreme Mode, and I was on the last level, and my girlfriend was in the room with me. And when I had finished, I turned to her, I was like, I don't know how I did that. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, it's almost like I was on autopilot, because everything moves so fast. You don't have, your brain doesn't have time to ponder and wonder on where you're going to go, and you just sort of go on instinct. Was that a design choice? Because with the color coding and things like that, were you aware that people would go into this state and it would be difficult, but satisfying as well?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's something we tried to do, and with the harder difficulty levels, I would basically create a pattern that I couldn't play, and then I would practice and practice to the point where I could play it, and, you know, sometimes there were things I just couldn't get, and then I had to cut those out, because it's like, no one else is going to be able to do that. But definitely, we tried to make the game sort of as easy to read as possible. Which, certainly, when people look at the game, they don't really see that. They're like, oh, what the hell is all this stuff going on? I have no idea. But once you get the hang of it, once you understand what's going on and how everything fits together, we spent a lot of time making it really clear so you could figure out what to do.
Okay. Yeah. There's definitely lots of signals, and the color coding, for me, I found that my brain was just trained with the colors after a while, which brings me on to challenge mode, actually. one thing you said about how you would come up with a pattern that you found too difficult. Mm-hmm. Now, for people that don't know, that a lot of the dialogue in the game, the descriptions of the levels about Rick, the main character's adventure, a lot of it's quite funny, sarcastic. There's one in the challenge mode that says this pattern was deemed too difficult for the campaign. Is that true?
Yeah, so basically, that level, a few reviews even singled it out as being too hard, but that level sort of was really tough to get right because I had all these cool ideas for, like, new attacks and stuff, and so I spent a lot of time putting together all these new elements and making the level really cool. But the problem was that because it was all these new elements and all this crazy stuff going on, it was very, very difficult. And so over the course of development, I had to keep sort of watering it down. Like, I had the level right where I wanted it, and then I had to change it and make it easier, and then make it easier still. And I would actually make my wife play. And so that was sort of my judge of if it was too hard, and certainly for many iterations it was too hard for my poor wife. She was like, no, I can't play this. And I'm like, well, I mean, like, I didn't want to water it down, which is always a bad game design thing, is when you know something it needs to be changed, but you're too attached to it, so you don't want to. So I'm like, no, just keep playing. And she's like getting exasperated, and she really can't do it. And then I'm like, okay, I really need to address this. But because I was so attached to the patterns of things I came up with before, I figured I would resurrect them for challenge mode.
I beat one of those levels, by the way, on challenge mode. So
awesome.
I did it.
Good job.
I want to talk about challenge mode quite a lot because this is one thing that surprised me. When I played the game, I played through the campaign, and I was like, oh, sweet. First of all, I did it on medium core, and then I went through the other difficulty levels. And I was like, okay, I'm done with the majority of the game. Let's check out challenge mode. And challenge mode, for me, is actually the majority of the game because I'm not sure on the exact number, but how many challenges are there?
130.
And the reason why it's so addictive, a lot of people might think that Retrograde is just a rhythm game, and on a surface it is heavily rhythm based, but there's a lot of unlockable content as well. Mm-hmm. And challenge mode offers new ships, new artwork, music, cheats. Was that an idea from the beginning that challenge mode would be so robust, or did you just kind of add and add and add until it was this huge thing?
No, we had the idea of a challenge mode, but it was not really that big or impressive until the end of development. It sort of came together at the end, and we kind of realized, like, hey, this is really the meat of the game. But at that point, it was kind of too late to change how the game worked, because, I mean, like, if I had to do it all over again, I might make the campaign mode actually challenge mode, and then have the campaign stuff basically as score attack type thing. I think challenge mode is really interesting and really where a lot of the cool stuff comes into play. And but I worry that people will basically neglect challenge mode, or sometimes it's annoying because people are like, oh, you know, this first challenge is so easy, you know, challenge mode is really not challenging. Which, if you get the warps and stuff, you can skip through a lot of the easy stuff in challenge mode, and then it becomes just brutally difficult. We have mm-hmm. some challenges that are much more difficult than the regular extreme difficulty levels, so.
Yeah, that's a... Well, I had a similar experience, actually, when I first played it. I'd got through a lot of the campaign, and I started the challenge mode, and it was on a casual level. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, man. But it's quickly introduced that you have these warps that send you to higher difficulty levels, which mm-hmm. is something we mentioned in our review, because, it allows you to skip that initially quite easy content and get onto the good stuff. And there's some things that you think wouldn't be difficult, like disco ball. Mm-hmm. Disco music, and disco music, for people that don't know, it changes the colors. So much of what is based on is like color-coded stuff, and it's like messes with the colors, and then you have like mirror mode and zoomed in so you can't see as well, and things like that. Where did you guys come up with some of these ideas to do these spins and on the objectives?
Well, it's a lot of brainstorming and a lot of trying to figure out what would work with the gameplay. Without being too hard, certainly that we had some ideas that were just no fun at all and just too hard, like, you know, messing with the controls or something.
Oh,
or
man.
Flipping the screen the other way. Those didn't really turn out to be fun. I had another one where it would basically adjust the tempo of the music, like, back and forth. But, I mean, it you know, seemed like, hey, this might be worth a try, but they were just, you know, really not fun. So we basically just came up with a bunch of crazy ideas, picked the best ones, tried them, you know, played them and see what worked and what didn't. But a lot of the game is sort of playing with your sort of preconceptions about what a game is. So instead of playing a game forward and retrograde, you play the game backwards. And then, you know, you have preconceptions with the way the game works based on the regular levels in campaign mode, and then we play with those in challenge mode. So even your preconceptions about retrograde aren't actually right.
Yeah. And some of the cool things in challenge mode as well is the unlockables. Like I recently unlocked a Meat Boy spaceship, a Minecraft mm-hmm. spaceship, things like that. Did you have to approach these guys to see if you could use those things?
Yeah, basically we talked to them and they were really cool about it, so it was a lot of fun to get these other characters in our game.
That's awesome. That's what's so addictive at the moment about challenge mode for me. I just want to get the ships and the music as well, which we haven't even talked about, which is another cool idea. The turntables, could you explain to listeners what the turntables are and what you can do with it?
So basically, a lot of games have like unlockable music and a music player. And so we wanted to sort of take that to the next level. And so when you unlock the music, you actually get a two turntable set up with a crossfader. And so you can basically load the songs on the different platters and then scratch or adjust the tempo or beat match and actually mix the music just inside the game using the game music you unlock in challenge mode.
Yeah, that's toying with that. I'm not very good at that at the moment though, but we mentioned that in our review because that was one of the coolest features when I went into extras. And I was like, oh wow, this is sweet. And another thing that's worth mentioning is all those crazy things that you spoke about in challenge mode, you can unlock them as cheats, right? And apply them to any level.
Yeah, so yeah, we have a bunch of cheats and we have a few others that aren't based on challenge mode. But yeah, basically, if you like, because some people were saying in Rock Band, there's like a zoom on the harder difficulties, it zooms in. And they find that easier for Rock Band. I don't think it's easier for Retrograde. I think it's harder, but basically it seemed like, hey, this would be something neat to add, and we can put it in challenge mode, and then we can make it an option. So if people really feel like it's easier seeing less of the battle, then they can go for it. But in my opinion, it's way tougher just because in Retrograde, it's less reactive than like Rock Band or Guitar Hero. You have to sort of anticipate.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that comment that it's harder, especially with the bullet hell stuff.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult as you're like, holy crap, it's like coming right towards me. You didn't even know it. Yeah, that's yeah, I definitely agree with that. So after talking about the turntables and the cool music and stuff, I think this would be a good time to talk about the composer, the choice of music you wanted, and how exactly you integrate that into a game. Could you talk about the composer, what it was like getting Skylar, and why you wanted him?
So Skylar McLaughlin is one of my personal favorite musicians. He released a number of electronic CDs as Nautilus some years back, and so we struck up a correspondence, I don't know, many years ago, and he mentioned he was interested in doing music for video games. And so I sort of made a mental note. And then when we decided, hey, we're going to make a rhythm game, we really need great music, I felt like Skylar would be the perfect fit for that. Because basically we need some music that really can stand on its own. And it's very difficult to find that. And as well, we need a musician who's willing to work with gameplay constraints, because that's a lot of times you get composers, they're not really interested in games or whatever, and that they don't really care about making concessions for the gameplay. So working with Skylar was really great because we would say, hey, in order to get the difficulty curve we want, we need rhythms like this, or this is sort of the tempo we're looking at. And so he was very receptive to our requests to sort of structure the music around the gameplay goals we had.
It's interesting you say that, actually, because it's quite seamless in terms of the melody and stuff, because the music, at least when I play, I don't know about other people, but it really aids you in completing the levels, you know, tapping your foot, listening to the melody. Eventually, once you've got the melody caught in your head, it's quite easy. So how many concessions did you have to make then?
So basically, we did sort of an iterative process. So he would do some, put together some ideas, and then we'd go back and forth, and I'd say, well, you know, this sort of works with what we're looking at, or this maybe needs a little work. And then we actually went through and did music for the entire game and gameplay for the entire game. And then at that point, we basically went through and revisited every single level and improved the gameplay and improved the music as well, just because at that point we had a game, you could play it, and so we could see, you know, where the gameplay was lacking and maybe needed something else, and we could see, you know, where the music was lacking and could use a little work.
So did you have a kind of a backup plan if Skylar wasn't going to come through? Did you have any ideas for other types of music you were going to introduce for the game?
Not really, because we got him on board early on when we were still in the prototyping phase. He was interested, and we actually, our original IGF demo used some tunes from some of his CDs, and then we wanted to create a sort of retro sounding but also still modern music. So we wanted sort of a chiptune infused, but not, you know, the straight 8-bit beeps and squawks, just because we figured, like, on a 7.1 surround system that might get a little grating. So he was really able to rise to the challenge and put together really great stuff. So we were very fortunate to work with him. As far as backup plans, I don't know what we would have done, to be honest. It would have been tough to find someone of his caliber to work with us.
Do you think his input had a big impact on the gameplay? Because when one thing that differentiates this game from other rhythm games that I've played is that if there's, say, like, I mean, obviously not Rock Band, where you have different parts, but in some particular songs, I believe it's like Reverse Rhapsody, which is one of the levels in the game, there'll be like a breakdown where it's just drums. And in a lot of other rhythm games, you're just waiting. You're just there waiting for the moment to play again. But in Retrograde, it's like, now's the time to dodge. And and you have to start... The breakdown actually is another expansion on the gameplay where you're dodging rather than hitting, you know, hitting notes like you would in an ordinary rhythm game. So did his music have an impact on level design, or were you there from the start? You had a vision in your head?
No, it definitely had a huge impact on the level design, because basically we would get the tune and then we would craft the gameplay around that. So if there were a breakdown, then we'd have to figure out something to do interesting for that breakdown. And so we figured those would be like dodging sections. And so we fill those up with dodging.
Yeah, that was awesome when I was playing that. Because, yeah, I do find that in some other rhythm games where you're just sort of waiting for something to happen. When I was reviewing the game and I've been talking with friends about it, they would say things like, the rhythm genre, like, that's still going, type things like that. And I didn't even know I was a rhythm fan until I played Retrograde, really. Because Retrograde really has that sort of one more level type thing, you know, where you're busy doing something that's like, oh, one more level. So do you think the rhythm genre is going?
Well, I think the rhythm genre is sort of here to stay. It's just manifests itself in different forms. I mean, if you look at it in the big picture, it didn't start and end with, you know, Guitar Hero or Rock Band. Mm-hmm. You go back to like Parappa or you know, DDR.
Yeah.
Or my personal favorite is Samba de Amigo with the maracas, not the Dreamcast one, not the Wii one. The Wii one's really terrible. But it's really a lot of different ways, and I think to some extent the current dance game craze is an extension of the rhythm game or the music game. So I think it's constantly changing, and I think one of the problems with Guitar Hero and Rock Band is they really didn't take it to the next level. They really didn't say, okay, we've got gameplay you like, now we're going to do something, you know, new and fresh and cool and build off that.
Definitely.
So I feel like it's just song, 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 and not like, here's something cool or new, a direction we could take it in. And so that's one of the things with Retrograde, is we wanted to create something new. We wanted to take the rhythm game genre in a new direction.
Yeah, and that's definitely achieved that, at least when I was playing. Because like I said, I didn't even realize I was a rhythm genre fan until I was playing that game, and you just get lost in it. But you were talking about sort of innovating and adding things new.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was playing the game, I was thinking of how cool these certain things would be, because you have these like the music turntables with the mixing, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a point in development, and I've got no idea about budget and things like that, so feel free to like shoot me down and say there was no way that could happen, But was there ever a moment where you thought, man, it would be awesome if there was like user-generated content here, where you could make your own levels?
Yeah, certainly that was a thought, but it's very difficult to author the levels, just because there is a lot of stuff going on, and you have to figure out, you know, hey, there is a path, and this path is doable. And then there's also, basically, we start with the gameplay pattern, and then we generate the battle from the pattern. Basically, that just makes it a lot easier to change and tune and tweak the actual gameplay. But the flip side of that is that the battle in and of itself is very difficult to figure out just from the gameplay. So I have almost like an AI agent that figures out where everything should be, where things can go based on the battle. The problem is if you have arbitrary stuff going on, it may produce something that the AI agent just can't figure out. Because part of the problem is there's no right answer for the battle. There's no way of saying, you know, this is the perfect battle, this is the best we can do. It's sort of like, this is what will look best, probably, given the input. And so you spend a lot of time creating this AI agent that places everything, but it's not perfect. And so sort of exposing that to users may be tough, just in that it would say, like, hey, you know, you can't do this, sorry, because of a certain conflict or something. And so probably that would have to be a whole lot more robust. And as well, we really didn't have the time to do that. Certainly, you know, we'd love to add more content, you know, the ability to do user-created content and all sorts of stuff. But to some extent, we're limited by time. Certainly 4 years in development is a long time, and probably longer than we should have spent on the game. But it just wasn't something we could do, you know, afford to self-fund any more development.
Was the morale of the team, like, as it went on and on, does it become more grueling and almost, for want of a better word, like, less fun? Or are you still motivated from start to finish?
No, it was definitely difficult to remain motivated, and it was really tough. It was a very tough development cycle, and it was very tough to do the game over 4 years. Because when we set out, we didn't set out to make a game over 4 years. We wanted to do something quick and just get something out there, but we, you know, ran into some troubles. We had a lot of feature creep. Part of it was the market was changing faster than we could develop because our team was so small. So all of a sudden, the bar for downloadable titles kept getting raised. You know, games like Shadow Complex and stuff. And you know, Ubisoft puts a lot of money into these downloadable titles. So we felt like we had to compete with them. And so we had to sort of go back to the drawing board and, you know, improve our graphics, improve how we're doing the backgrounds to make a game that looks competitive.
So after a while, it was almost like you felt like you were playing catch-up to a certain extent. Is that
right? Yeah. For a large portion of development, we felt like we were playing, because it's so tough having such a small team. I mean, if someone gets sick, It majorly pushes back the schedule. You have three people, and each person has their own sort of area of what they do. And so if they get sick, then all of a sudden your schedule's behind however many days they had to take off. So yeah, it's very difficult to keep up.
Could you explain to people who might not know what feature creep means? I first heard this term when a Red Faction developer spoke about it.
So basically, feature creep is when you have a list of sort of an idea of what you're going to do, but over time you get new ideas and then you sort of expand it and add them in. And so over time it can be, it can certainly make a game a lot better, but it can also be very problematic for getting the game out of time, out on time, and sticking with the schedule that makes sense for the team. So basically you have these new ideas and then they creep in, and then you have a much longer schedule. You have much more to do than you set out to.
Is that just a natural part of game development, or is that something that goes away after many, 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 many games?
I think it's a, it really depends how you approach game development, because I think often feature creep is a great thing, because you can find new ideas and cool new things and add them to the game. So if something turns out cool, you can spend more time on it. But I think it's tough to schedule, and I think that's why the best game development company, Blizzard and Valve, they finish games whenever they feel like they're complete, because that allows them to creep in any features they want and, you know, cut anything that's not working and, you know, replace it with something else. Because part of the problem with game development is it's very difficult to capture fun. It's really hard to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to make this game fun, and then you type it up and then all of a sudden you have a fun game. That's not the way it works. You basically have to come up with a bunch of ideas, try them, tune them, tweak them, and then eventually, hopefully, if you're lucky and if you're good, then things will arrive at fun. But it's very difficult to sort of capture fun.
Yeah, that's one thing I hear a lot actually from developers when you listen to interviews and things. I was listening to like an Assassin's Creed 1 developer interview, and they were talking about how they found it quite difficult, like you say, to sort of, you have an idea on paper that sounds amazing, and then apparently once it gets in game, it's not quite as good as you thought.
Oh yeah, but I think that's putting it mildly. Sometimes, you know, your idea on paper sounds amazing, and then you implement it, and it's just awful. And that happens all the time, and you know, sometimes people come up with these long and detailed documents and spend, you know, weeks coming up with this, what they view as the perfect idea, and then you get it in game and it just totally doesn't work at all, and then you basically have to cut it and throw away all that work, or leave it and then your game's not fun.
I imagine that can be quite difficult given the size of your team as well. Did you have a lot of time to do focus testing and things like that?
Yes, sort of. We basically tried very hard to do focus tests, and so we actually took the game over to that game company.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, a bunch of people there to play and focus test the game, and that was really valuable. And so, yeah, we got other developers and friends to focus test the game, and then I also implemented an analytics system, which analytics is more popular in like the mobile space, but basically the idea is you get a bunch of statistics about the people who are playing the game, and from that you can determine how things are working and how to tune the game. So we did, over the 4 years, spend a lot of time tuning and tweaking and focus testing to try and make the most fun game possible.
Ah, I see. And now the game's out, and it's been out for a bit now. Not as long as that makes it sound, but it has been out. What's the atmosphere now like from the team now that it's finally out? Now you're getting the feedback, the reviews. How does it feel?
It's definitely a relief, a huge weight off of our shoulders. We've gotten a lot of positive press, and people seem to really be seem to really enjoy the game, which is really great and validating for the development of the, you know, to sort of justify all this time and effort we put into the game.
Yeah. And now it is out. I do kind of want to touch on what's next for the future. And I know you can't announce anything or anything like that. But when I was playing Retrograde, one thing that kept ringing true to me, and this is actually true, I was on the bus and I was like, man, like, I really want to play Retrograde. Felt like Retrograde would be a perfect fit for the PlayStation Vita. Have you considered a mobile platform? Have you talked to Sony about anything like that?
Well, definitely we get a lot of requests for Vita, we get a lot of requests for downloadable content, we get a lot of requests for Steam. So it's all things that we're taking into account. But the problem is that we're such a small team, and doing a version for another system, or doing downloadable content takes us a lot of time. And so, we really have to sort of choose our next steps, intelligently in terms of what we can do to sort of to make back our investment in Retrograde. Because, you know, we spent so much money on Retrograde, and now we need to start making that money back. And so our PlayStation 3 sales, unfortunately, have not been, you know, super great. We're able to pick and choose the projects that we want and do whatever we dream of. So we have to, you know, think about what makes sense. And unfortunately, because we spent so much time optimizing for the PlayStation 3, it's difficult to bring to other platforms just because we really created something that's pushing the PlayStation 3 to its limits, and so moving that to like Vita would require a lot of work to recreate that level of technology, especially because I don't think that the Vita is quite the quite as powerful of a machine as the PlayStation 3.
Oh right, yeah, definitely, yeah. But man, it's just, I wish I had that on the go. It's like it's like the perfect. It's got that pick up and play nature to it, Retrograde.
Definitely. We wanted to create something that was pick up and play, and something that you could, you know, hey, I have some time, let me just get a game of Retrograde or two in. Definitely. It seems like a good fit for a portable platform. I can't say we'll do it, but it's something we're considering.
And you say that you optimized a lot of it for the PlayStation 3 initially, because that's where development started. Now that hurdle is overcome, if you were going to start a new project, whether it's a Retrograde 2 or something entirely different, would development time be a lot quicker now that you've got that down? Do you have an engine that you'll be using in projects, or will it be a rebuild depending on the game?
Well, we have an engine, but a lot of the technology we built is only good for Retrograde or certain things like Retrograde. So it will definitely speed up development, but there's always, you know, new things you can do, and then also the bar keeps getting raised in terms of, you know, consumer expectations. So it's very difficult, being a small team, to deliver a outstanding project. It'll definitely make things easier, but I don't think it'll be like, hey, we're cranking out a new game in a couple months or a year or whatever.
Right. I'm aware that we have to wrap up soon, so I'm just going to ask one last question. And that's about you as a developer. And like I say, I know nothing can be announced here, but just from one gamer to another, what ideas do you have for other IPs? I mean, are you sort of you love that rhythm genre so much, or would you move into other genres like third person shooters or anything?
I wouldn't mind doing other genres, just because I've done the rhythm game thing for 4 years, and I like to a variety of different games, and I like to work on a variety of different game types. So definitely I'm interested in doing games that are outside the rhythm genre, just because it's more interesting as a developer to explore different ideas.
What are some of your favorite games?
Well, my very favorite game is Panzer Dragoon Saga.
Oh, really?
Sega Saturn, yes. Which is a very difficult game to get a hold of, just because there's so few copies in the U.S. Or, well, I don't know how it was in Europe, but probably not very many. Mm-hmm. But basically, like, Panzer Dragoon Saga is a role-playing game in the Panzer Dragoon world, but it has sort of a unique and fresh and fun take on combat. But also, the thing that's so amazing to me about Panzer Dragoon that I love so much is it really feels like another world. Like, when you play a Panzer Dragoon game, you're in another world, and it's so fleshed out. They even made up their own language. So, it's really different. It's really feels so amazing that you're transported to this other world. And I think, you know, no other RPG, I mean, even though the Saturn's graphics are total garbage, I don't think any game has ever been able to capture that sense of you know, role-playing in a completely different place, at least for me. And I think the world is really interesting and cool. And so that's my very favorite game. I love Samba de Amigo as well for Dreamcast. I'm a big fan of the Gears of War games. Big fan of Mario 2D and 3D platformers. So yeah, I like a lot of different types of games.
And have you had a chance to play the spiritual successor to Panzer Dragoon on the 360?
I don't think it's out in the U.S.
I mean, like, at a trade show or anything?
Unfortunately, I have not. Like, it was at PAX and PAX East, but the problem is I have to be at my booth all the time. So, no, I was really disappointed because it seemed like it was coming out sooner, and I think it may have come out in Japan, but they have not released it, and I don't think they even have a release date, so I'm pretty bummed about that.
But you're excited for it, yeah?
Yeah, I'm a little wary about the Kinect controls, just mm-hmm. because it's a very, at least the other Panzer Dragoon, the rail shooters, which I love rail shooters, were very required a lot of precision. And so, like, Child of Eden, I tried to play it with the Kinect, but it was just too frustrating. And so, I mean, I enjoyed the game, but I played it with a controller, which was an option, and I don't think that's an option for Crimson Dragon. Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah, Crimson Dragon, yeah.
So, a little worried, but, I mean, it's the same guy who did all the Panzer Dragoon games, so I'm not too worried. I'm sure I'll love it, regardless.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to get our hands on that either, but, I guess we better leave it there, because I've taken up enough of your time, really, Matt. but thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
No problem. Retrograde, I still got to unlock stuff. One last question, though. Are you going to make good on your promise to release the armored rocket ship after 10 billion sales?
Yes, I will. If the game sells 10 billion, I will gladly remove that from future copies of the game. But I'm not sure there's a risk of that.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot, Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this Baby Games interview. I'd like to thank Matt once again for setting aside his time to join us today. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube for more gaming news, previews, and reviews, and editorials, and all kinds of stuff. Thanks.